a roundup of the main business news from China and elsewhere. This is Global Business.
From CGTN headquarters here in Beijing, this is Global Business. I'm Michael Wong. The headlines we're tracking at this hour. After U.S. President Joe Biden signs into law a bill that could ban TikTok, the social media platform responds by saying a potential ban is unconstitutional. China, meanwhile, has pledged to take all necessary measures to protect its legitimate economic interests. China criticizes a European Commission probe regarding the country's public procurement of medical devices. And the Beijing Auto Show revs into action today with smart mobility in the spotlight. TikTok says it will challenge the ban signed into law by U.S. President Joe Biden in court and expects an ultimate win. The social media platform argues the potential ban is unconstitutional and will devastate some 7 million businesses and silence 170 million Americans. TikTok stressed that it has invested billions of dollars to secure U.S. data and keep the platform free from external influence and manipulation. The firm's CEO, Shou Zixu, said in a video message that, quote, TikTok is not going anywhere and that the facts and the Constitution are on TikTok's side. He also said the firm expects to prevail again. Now, here again refers to the block by the courts of an attempt to ban TikTok back in 2020 by then President Trump. Our John Tarrant is in New York with more.
Basically, the ban of TikTok is on. It's as simple as that. And from a politician's point of view, they've been rather clever because what they did was they added it to the foreign aid bill. The House on Saturday passed $95 billion for Ukraine and for Gaza, Israel, and also for Taiwan. But they bolted on the TikTok ban. And this is not unusual in American politics. They call it pork here, as in fattening the pig or fattening the cow. It's the same thing. And what normally happens is, in order to get a congressperson's vote or a senator's vote, they'll say, well, what do you want for this vote? And they'll say, well, I want $10 million for a bridge in my constituency. So they add $10 million. Well, in this case, they've added the potential TikTok ban. And if ByteDance doesn't divest itself of TikTok within basically the next year, and preferably sell it to a U.S. company, then the ban is going to be on. Now, TikTok is really angry about this. They're vowing to respond robustly. They're talking about court challenges, which could all push this down the road a very long way, by the way. Although I have to say, people in the Senate seem very convinced that the legislation is actually pretty robust and that this ban is likely to take place now in 9 to 10 months. TikTok says, look, it's unfair. We've got 150 to 170 million people using it, a small minority running businesses on it. And they're going to do all they can to try and delay any kind of ban and potentially overturn it.
Well, for more on the future of TikTok in the United States, I want to bring in Einar Tangen, an independent political and economics affairs commentator. Einar, thanks for joining us. So first of all, what do you see as the potential economic impacts of banning TikTok in the U.S., in particular, the impact, I would say, on smaller businesses and, of course, those individual content creators that use the platform for marketing and sales?
Well, obviously, there are going to be some losers. Some of them will transition to different platforms. However, you know, those platforms now are going to be in a more monopolistic position, Michael. And as a result, you know, the prices of everything is going to go up for these guys. TikTok was about competition. Now they're getting rid of it.
So let's talk about both sides of the story here. TikTok has called the potential ban unconstitutional. U.S. officials saying a potential national security risk for TikTok. How do you look at this issue?
Well, it's not. I mean, TikTok has done everything it possibly can to show that it is not a security risk. They have the information is processed in the United States. They've gone to great lengths and spent a tremendous amount of money. Now it's going to come down to the courts. And what TikTok is doing is they may not see, you know, this stretching out for 4 or 5 years, but really where they want to go is get a better valuation at some point, not be under pressure to sell it in a fire sale, but get what they think is a true value. Obviously, a hostile government, it's very difficult to have a long-term strategy where you're going to be at odds with the politics. But You know, Donald Trump is eyeing those $150-170 million TikTok users, and he's come out against it after originally being for it when he was president. And that means that there could be a real sea change if, in fact, he is elected. Obviously, this ban will not take effect until after the presidential election is solved. Illegally, they're on shaky ground. The idea that you can pass a law against one company without any proof, that violates due process, and there's going to be a very robust challenge to that. But it's, in the end, it's going to be a delaying tactic to see what happens politically.
Right. So the Biden administration, of course, supporting the TikTok ban, claiming that China could influence the U.S. election via TikTok. But at the same time, U.S. media, of course, also pointing out that President Biden will continue to use TikTok for his campaign purposes as well. So what do you make of all this?
Well, I guess politics trumps any kind of values or principles that are being talked about. You know, everyone looks at this as an extreme hypocrisy. You want to use it, but you say you want to ban it. You know, generally, it's one or the other. In his case, you know, Biden is facing a lot of uphill battles. This is a very unpopular decision with the people. He's already facing a situation where 60% of Americans feel worse off today than they did when he was first elected.
Mm. And Einar, you briefly touched upon this earlier, but maybe expand for us a little bit more. What consequences do you think a TikTok ban will have on market competition in the U.S. tech industry?
No, obviously, it gets rid of one huge player, the most popular player out there. And of course, this is going to benefit, you know, Facebook and the rest of them. And they're you know, sitting quietly waiting to divide up the pie when it comes. But, you know, truthfully, it probably will be sold. The question is when and what valuation. And at that point, there still will be some competition. The question in my mind is, how do you settle the IP issue of this algorithm that they use? You know, can that in fact be shared, and how do you handle it?
Okay, we're going to leave it there. Einar, many thanks for your thoughts. Einar Tangen, independent political and economics affairs commentator. Thank you. And up next here on Global Business. China criticizes a European Commission probe regarding the country's public procurement of medical devices.
The world economy as we know it is about to change. Global business reports highlight emerging markets, developing countries, and dynamic sectors worldwide. We feature top analysts and newsmakers to provide perspectives on every facet of business. From an on-the-ground perspective, we provide you with balanced and objective assessments. Fast, sharp, and insightful. Global Business. Only on CGTN.
The European Commission launched an investigation into China's public procurement of medical devices on Wednesday. That probe aims to determine if European suppliers have been given fair access to the Chinese market. Now, if unfair practices are found, the EU may impose restrictions on Chinese medical device companies bidding in EU public tenders. The European Union has identified practices such as a Buy China policy and import restrictions as potential factors favoring Chinese bidders. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin has criticized the EU move, stating that it is moving towards protectionism and should stop suppressing Chinese enterprises without valid reasons. And the Chinese Commerce Ministry says Chinese industries are extremely shocked and dissatisfied after the European Union conducted raids on a Chinese company's offices. The raids, which occurred without prior notice on Tuesday morning, aimed to investigate potential industry subsidies. The ministry said this is the fifth time there has been such an investigation since February, and all of them targeted Chinese firms. The ministry said China strongly opposed the, quote, unjustifiable, unannounced raids, pointing out the lack of prior notice and solid evidence to justify such actions. It said the actions send a detrimental message not only to Chinese companies, but to all non-EU companies operating in the bloc. The Chinese side called on European authorities to stop abusing foreign subsidies regulation tools, effectively protect the legitimate rights and interests of foreign companies, and ensure a genuinely fair and non-discriminatory business environment for all non-EU companies. The ministry also said China will continuously monitor the follow-up of the event and will take all necessary measures to resolutely safeguard the legitimate rights and interests of Chinese enterprises. Well, certain countries claim that there is overcapacity in certain industries here in China. CGTN's Guo Tianqi spoke to Jens Eskelund, president of the European Union Chamber of Commerce in China, to find out the views of EU investors. Take a listen.
The fact that you address overcapacity issues does not mean that you cannot cooperate. In fact, I would say that if you go in and you work together on trying to avoid that you are seeing excessive capacity and that you are seeing companies being pushed towards bankruptcy, that would actually enhance the chances of fruitful collaboration. I think most people will agree, and certainly I do, that China needs to be part and is a critically important facilitator of that transition we all need to undergo in terms of decarbonizing supply chains and meeting the climate challenge.
Many EU politicians have visited China recently, so what message does this send to the business community?
When you look at the EU-China relationship, it's very, very wide, it's very, very deep. And I think it's almost any sort of product category that you look at, that there is room for some sort of collaboration. What we are seeing, of course, also is that China is climbing the value ladder, and that we see increasingly that labor-intensive, low-value-added manufacturing is moving out of China. So it's a relationship that's evolving. I think we are continuing to see European companies invest in China, but we are also beginning to see that European companies are beginning to diversify the number of destinations. There are many countries now that are also competing for attention and becoming attractive from an investor perspective. So it will be important for China that China continues to focus on how China can continue to provide a competitive and attractive investment environment for foreign investors.
And Hungary's foreign minister has dismissed the accusation that there is overcapacity in China's electric vehicle industry. In an exclusive interview with China Media Group, the Hungarian foreign minister said it's still a burgeoning industry and there is big demand for EV products globally.
Overcapacity doesn't exist. I mean, this is a new industry. Mm-hmm. This industry is in the making. So, I mean, there's a big demand for new electric cars. By 2030, there should be 45 million electric cars driving on the roads of the world. Now only we have 10 million.
Far from that.
Yeah, very far from that. And it's only 6 years to go, and, you know, it's very close. So therefore, overcapacity doesn't exist. Lack of capacity does exist. So, I mean, we would need much more capacity to boost this industry. So, therefore, speaking about overcapacity is something which is very, very, very far away of reality and is just, you know, a political ideological statement.
Okay, I want to bring it back now to the EU's investigation of China's public procurement policies from medical device companies and bring in Dr. Zhou Mi, a senior research fellow at the Chinese Academy of International Trade and Economic Cooperation. Dr. Zhou, thank you for joining us. So, first of all, are there actually discriminatory measures in China's medical device public procurement policies?
We know that government procurement is a very special area, that every country has its own laws and regulations. As for China, we also have our law on the government procurement. Actually, in this law, we have made it very clear that any providers located in China can provide their products to the government procurement. So I think that when EU is trying to talk about that, maybe they have to look at what is now doing by the United States for the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, they are really another version of the Buy American products. And if we are trying to look at this issue, I think that is a really important way for us to understand that that is not commitment on the WTO platforms. So China is one of the very important party in the WTO, and we want to join the government procurement agreement, which is a plurilateral agreement in WTO. We can join that, and if we join that, every countries, every providers, no matter for the engineering contracts or other kind of goods or services, they can enjoy the same treatment.
Right. So then how do you view the impact of the EU's investigative actions on Chinese medical equipment and device companies either bidding or already doing business in the European market, even though we don't have a decision right now? Just the fact that an investigation is ongoing, does that put Chinese companies at a current disadvantage?
I think that they are putting our very wrong directions on the way that, you know, EU is trying to strengthen its resilience of the supply chain, especially in the health-related industry and sectors. So Chinese companies is one of the very important providers of many equipment on the medical cares. I think that if they are putting some investigation on these companies, they may decide not to provide a sustainable supply to the EU market, which is definitely not good for EU to strengthen its resilience. Of the supply chain and the de-risking policies cannot be useful in this regard.
So then what strategies can China adopt to respond to the EU's use of economic and trade actions against Chinese companies?
I think that both sides should try to sit down and trying to discuss about the possibilities to address these problems. Actually, we are providing very wide areas of policies for EU companies. They come here, they invest in China, then they have to meet the standards and requirements of the Chinese administrations. It's very important because for the Chinese patients, they need some confidence on using the different kind of medical equipment. And also, we are trying to push on the agreements and negotiation of the GPA, which is a very important commitment by China. And also, I think the support from EU side is really important for us to fulfill this process.
Okay. Dr. Zhou, many thanks for your thoughts on all of that. Dr. Zhou Mi, Senior Research Fellow at the Chinese Academy of International Trade and Economic Cooperation. The 2024 Zhongguancun Forum has kicked off right here in Beijing. A platform for global science, technology, and innovation exchanges and cooperation. This forum will run for 5 days. We've got participants from over 100 countries and regions discussing this year's theme, Innovating for a Better World. CGTN's Liu Jiaxin joins us now from the Zhongguancun Forum with more. Jiaxin, hi there. Thanks for joining us. What's the latest you're seeing on the ground?
Sure, Michael. Well, first day at the 2024 Zhongguancun Forum, a lot of panels have already been on, and they are part of 120 activities, including workshops, panels, and networking activities, events throughout this five-day event. Well, for this year, it's this annual gathering of innovators, entrepreneurs, as well as thought leaders is definitely a hotbed for idea exchanges and collaborations. So here, from governmental officials to industry titans, everyone is keen to share their insights as well as to seek potential collaborations with each other. For example, in this morning's opening session, Ding Xueqiang, who's vice premier of China State Council, delivered a keynote speech featuring innovation as well as global cooperation. So, for example, he said, and I quote, "The key to Chinese-style modernization lies in technological modernization, and China will adhere to high-level self-reliance as a national development strategy." So this time, China has put this innovation in a high level. Well, to explore potential collaborations in the areas of artificial intelligence, carbon neutrality, carbon peak, as well as biotech. Well, speaking of renewable energy, a lot of participants show their enthusiasm. For example, Xiaomi's founder and CEO Lei Jun delivered a keynote speech in today's speech as well. He said that Xiaomi company attaches great importance to the green sustainability, and they have this solar panels on the roofs of every of their workshop. So 35% of the electricity that Xiaomi needs a year comes from their own generated green electricity. And this company has pledged to achieve carbon neutrality by the year of 2040. Well, on this path to achieve carbon neutrality, Xiaomi is not alone. And there are a lot more companies beyond. So in this year's event, it's not just about discussions, about panels. It's also about, exchanging and networking. So that's the point of this 120 activities. And we are here throughout this 5-day event. And please stay tuned as we bring more highlights and insights from this prestigious gathering. Back to you, Michael.
Okay. keep us updated, Jiaxin, our Liu Jiaxin for us at the 2024 Zhongguancun Forum. Thank you. And of course, there's a lot of technology, a lot of innovation in cars these days, and Auto China 2024 begins today as well, with smart mobility taking center stage. All well-known auto brands from both China and abroad will take part in that show. 117 global premieres as well as 41 concept automobiles will be unveiled at the exhibition. A total of 278 new energy vehicle models will be showcased. The show will run until May 4th, with the first 2 days reserved for media. The Beijing Auto Show dates back to 1990 and takes place every 2 years, with the 17th edition, though, in 2022 skipped due to the pandemic. The show, along with three other auto fairs held in Shanghai, Guangzhou, and Chengdu, are China's four major auto exhibitions. All right, let's get on the ground right now to Auto China 2024 and check in with our very own Li Mengyuan. Mengyuan, bustling at the auto show right now, what I can see. What's happening today?
Good afternoon, Michael. I'm so excited right now, and I'm at Auto China 2024. I think everyone here has the same feeling as me. I'm so excited because we've met a lot of founders of very famous automakers in China and globally as well. So I'm so excited. And this morning, many automakers held their press conferences, and the dozens of new cars just made their debut here in Beijing, from entry-level to high-end models. There's something for everyone.
So then overall, Mengyuan, what are the highlights of this year's show?
Sure. There's one thing I think is very attracting, which is every company seems to making every efforts to trying to provide solutions to alleviate the range anxiety by shortening like the charging time and extending the driving range. And another interesting thing is that the high performance chips and the so-called half solid state LiDAR are being gradually widely used in terms of autonomous driving. So different from the past, nowadays the cars just upgrade very, very fast. So the automakers just keep launching new models, and this is really a good news for consumers. So I think this auto show not only provides a great opportunity for the consumers to pick their dream cars, but also for automakers, it's a great chance to get further interaction with each other. So this show will open to public from April 29th. So if you are in Beijing right here in the following May Day holiday, please don't hesitate to come here and have fun. By the way, I don't see any signs of overcapacity here, but only beyond imagination at every turn. Back to you, Michael.
Yeah, a very competitive car market we have here in China. Car makers from all around the world must bring their A game. Mengyuan, many thanks for that report. Our Li Mengyuan live for us at the Auto Show China 2024. Thank you. And earlier, my colleague Lily Liu spoke to Volkswagen CEO Oliver Blume on the sidelines of the Beijing Auto Show. They discussed how the automaker has been managing industry transformations and adapting to changes in capacity dynamics.
We are in the middle of the transformation, and it's about electrification, but also digitalization and connectivity, everything linked to artificial intelligence. We are developing, especially in terms of electrification, our battery strategy, where we are investing heavily in battery development and our own battery production, and mobility service play a big role for Porsche. And also the capital market is part of our strategy we built last year. And this week we are very happy to be in Beijing for the Beijing Auto Show. And this auto show we will link with a so-called Capital Markets Day, where we will present our strategy in China also to all the investors around the globe.
What role does the China market play in your global landscape?
The China market is very important for Volkswagen. We are here in China since 40 years. The Chinese market is developing with a high speed, very dynamic in terms of electromobility, digitalization, artificial intelligence, autonomous driving. Therefore, we are investing in our own development and software capacities, for example, 2.5 billion euros in the Anhui province, in our engineering center, but also strong investments together with our joint venture partners.
Mm-hmm. What about China's EV sector specifically? Because you're faced with also stronger competition from China's own homegrown brands. How do you view that?
I have a very positive view on the situation of competition. The EV market is developing also very quickly in China. We are expecting in 2025 already around 50% new electric vehicles in the market, the battery electric vehicles and the hybrids. And therefore, this is a quite big market. Today, in some technologies, China is a leading industry and is a powerhouse of innovations. And therefore, I think for all car manufacturers around the world, they can benefit from the Chinese speed, from the Chinese spirit in developing in innovations. And it's very positive to have strong competitors in the market, because it drives the industry, it brings the industry to invest, and it brings the industry to innovate.
And also recently there has been talks and debates about this so-called overcapacity issue in China's over-industry. I was hoping to get your view on that, and what kind of standards, what would you be looking for when you assess a market's potential and try to make your investment decisions?
Yeah, it's always necessary to check the capacities and where you invest. And we have strong expectations for the future also in the Chinese market. Last year, the Chinese market closed with around 22 million cars delivered to the customers, and up to the end of the decade, 2030, that's expected to increase the yearly production to in between 28 and 30 million cars a year. So the expectation is still very strong for the market, and therefore we adapted our product strategy in terms of ICEs, hybrids and electric vehicles to be a strong part of this development in the market. And we will carefully check where we invest in new capacities and where we will use existing capacities. Today, Volkswagen Group is working with 39 plants and 90,000 employees working for Volkswagen. And so we have a strong base, and we will develop it for the future.
And that will do it for this edition of Global Business here on CGTN. I'm Michael Wong here in Beijing. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next time.